It was a privilege and an honor to serve as a delegate from our session to the synod that met at Geneva College about a week ago. Dr. Stahl and Pastor Gregory and I were all delegates this year. So you may be wondering, first of all, what's a synod, if you've never heard that word before. We have in our church several governing bodies. We have sessions that oversee congregations. We have regional presbyteries. There are six of those. We're part of the Presbytery of the Alleghenies. And then the highest court of our church is called the Synod, and that meets once a year. Often we meet in Indiana. It seems like when RPI happens, we meet at Geneva, because we meet at Indiana Wesleyan for Synod 3 out of 4 years, and then RPI meets at Indiana Wesleyan the fourth year. So we have something happening at IWU every year, and that helps us maintain our reservation with them and work with their schedule. But once every 4 years, we get to meet at Geneva, and I thought that was nice. It's our college. It makes sense for us to meet there, and I got to sleep in my own bed at night, which I enjoyed. I distributed the State of the Church report. I'm not going to read through this, but this is something that gets written during Synod every year. They put together a little committee of three people to listen to Synod and figure out, you know, what's the state of the church, kind of like a State of the Union sort of thing. So I'd encourage you to read through that. I'll talk through some of the things you see here, but it's also good as a prayer guide as you're praying for our denomination over the coming year. I was really encouraged by this synod. I was kind of apprehensive going into it because the last several synods have had several weighty judicial cases to rule on, and this one had those as well. And sometimes the tone has not always been great, and I was really encouraged that we heard some really great preaching at synod. We started every day with a sermon, and the series that we heard this week from four different ministers was on mercy. From Hosea 6, God says, "I desire mercy, not sacrifice." And we heard that repeated throughout the week, that people would stand up to address a topic and they'd say, "You know, we were told in the sermon this morning to be merciful." And that you could tell that that was influencing people. C.J. Williams from the seminary preached one of those sermons, and he reminded us that it's sometimes better to be merciful than to be right. You know, sometimes we want to be right, and we want to argue for our position, and sometimes it's better to have mercy on the church and on the other delegates at Synod and recognize that we need to live with each other and work together. And I think that really set a very good tone for Synod, and I shouldn't be surprised. The preaching of God's word is effective in our lives, but it was very noticeable that these two sermons, especially early in the week from Pete Smith in Pittsburgh and C.J. Williams from the seminary, helped set a very good tone for the conversation. So you can give thanks with me to God for that. Tom Fisher from Cambridge, the congregation that I was raised in, was elected the moderator this year. It's unusual for a ruling elder to be the moderator. Dr. Copeland was once the moderator, as well as Steve McMahon from Kansas, but Tom Fisher is only the third ruling elder to be the moderator. And he kind of runs the meeting, but doesn't, he's intended to be kind of an arbiter, not a decision maker, but he's supposed to keep the meeting going according to the Book of Order, and I think he did a good job. He's a very even-handed person and understands the process well, so he did well. There's a topic that I'm sure most of you have been aware of, and that's the topic of women deacons. We ordain women as deacons as well as men. And there's a committee that's been studying that question to see if we should change that and only ordain men as deacons. So the big decision from this year was that no big decision was made. There's a committee that's studying it, and they asked to be allowed to keep studying it. They did a survey of elders and pastors around the denomination this year, and they're working through the responses on that. And they basically said, please just let us keep working on that. So no change as far as that goes. I'll talk through a few different topics and then touch on some of the judicial cases that we heard. And Dr. Stahl is going to come up and speak about a couple topics as well. In general, the church actually shrunk in total membership by 8%, but that was because we sent the Canadian churches out on their own as their own denomination this year. So they are now the RP Church of Canada. And we also lost two congregations for various reasons. And if you take those numbers out, we grew by 1%. So it looks like we shrunk, but really most of that was the Canadian churches. And then there were two churches, like I mentioned. One was West Lafayette, Indiana. That's a church that has been through a lot of scandal with child abuse, and they decided that they wanted to be an independent church, and they split off on their own. There's also a church in Dallas, Texas. They decided that they were more closely aligned with the Free Church of Scotland continuing. That's a smaller denomination that actually reports to a synod all the way over in Scotland, and they left just a week or two before synod to join the Free Church. So those are some of the reasons that those numbers look a little smaller. But overall, it seems like the church is healthy numbers-wise. The finances looked good. The RP Missions and Ministry met their goal. They help fund the various institutions like Crown and Covenant and the RP Home. They had some generous gifts from people's wills and other gifts, so that was good. The RP Global Missions made a bunch of bylaw changes, but one thing to take away is that they're really emphasizing Indigenous churches, like we've seen with Canada. Canada has become their own denomination, so that may have implications for our presbytery in Japan someday. They're a little bit smaller, maybe not quite there yet, but that seems like a possible route for them, that they end up as their own denomination, but they're not there yet. We have a lot of elections toward the end of Synod. We elect people to different committees and boards. Teresa Bloom has been serving on a committee to look into matters pertaining to child abuse and what we can do to support churches in preventing that. There were some openings on that committee, so Bethany Warren was voted onto that committee. So Keith Evans had vacated his position on that committee, as well as some others. So Bethany and two other folks were voted onto that committee. So you can pray for Bethany and for Teresa and the rest of that committee. They have some important and challenging work to do there. Also, Pastor Gregory was added to the nominating committee, which chooses who we should put on the ballot for people to vote for. It sounds like a boring committee, but I think it's the most significant one. You need to know the denomination very well, who might be good at serving in different capacities. So please pray for Pastor Gregory as he serves in that way. And I don't think that's a big time commitment. It's just an important one. So, as I mentioned, there's been a lot of judicial cases. That's a scenario where someone has a complaint against their presbytery, or a presbytery has a complaint against another presbytery, or maybe a decision was made in a discipline case and someone wants to appeal that. So we had a bunch of those again this year. And I would ask that you pray that we get out of this pattern of having so many judicial cases. It really drags down the synod. Synod used to be 7 days, now it's 3 to 4. And it's very hard to treat these cases with the time and energy that they need in that time. And we really had a hard time even finishing this year because one of the cases was so complicated that it didn't really come to the floor of Synod till Thursday night, and people had to get on a plane at lunchtime the next day, and it was very difficult to get that wrapped up. So if you look at our United States government, you see Congress is not great at working together and getting things done, so people think, well, if I just make a lawsuit and appeal it all the way to the Supreme Court, maybe that'll get it done. that's not a great way to do things, I think, and I don't think that we want to do that kind of thing in our church either. I think we want to work together in our presbyteries and in our sessions, and hopefully we can respect the decisions that have been made at various levels. And so I would ask you to pray. Obviously, we need to have these avenues for appeal and for complaints, but I would ask you to pray that we can get out of a rut of having so many of those every year. One of the cases that came up was about whether a ruling elder should be allowed to take an exception to exclusive psalmody. So an exception is when an officer of the church is ordained and they say, I'm going to support the church's position, but in my conscience, I don't agree with it. So the Blue Book is a big book. It says a lot. It's hard for someone to believe, agree with every single thing in their conscience, and we want to give people an avenue to say, I don't agree with this one thing or these two things. In the end, we did not, so the complaint was that a ruling elder should not have been allowed to be a ruling elder with that exception. And Synod did not say that that was incorrect. We did not say that across the board, ruling elders are always allowed to take that exception. But we said, in this case, we don't find any fault in the way it played out, the sequence of events, and so on. People care a lot about Psalms. We all love the Psalms. We reaffirmed our position on exclusive psalmody, so that should not be seen in any way as us moving away from exclusive psalmody. But it is, it's a hot topic, and I'll talk again in a few minutes about another discussion we had related to exclusive psalmody. There was a case from Southside, Indianapolis. A member of the congregation was put under discipline for what the session deemed to be divisive behavior related to an election. And this is all tangentially related to the issues in West Lafayette with the abuse situation there. But this person felt that someone who was standing or who was nominated for election should not be elected because he had signed something in support of the minister at West Lafayette, and sent out an email to 60% of a very large congregation, a long email explaining why this person should not be voted into office. And the session had tried to work with him and eventually put him under discipline, and that got appealed to the presbytery and then up to the synod. And that was probably the most complicated one that we had to deal with. In the end, we found some procedural issues that the session didn't follow, where the session didn't follow the correct sequence, but with so much to fit into the last day, we actually didn't figure out what are the implications. Is this person not under discipline anymore? What do we do? And we ended up creating a three-person committee of former moderators of Synod to go, or commission, to go figure that out for us, because we just ran out of time. But that was a very complicated one. They create little committees to look at these issues during the week and then recommend to Synod what to do. And my brother Brian was on the committee to look at that one, and I barely saw him all week. He was meeting with the complainant. He was meeting with people from the church. They were trying to come up with a recommendation to Synod, and it was just very complicated. So you can pray that that can be resolved wisely, and that peace can be made between those different parties. There was also a case from a teaching elder in the Midwest who holds the position that the contents of the communion cup should only ever be wine, that non-alcoholic grape juice is an innovation that is not allowed by Scripture. That's what he would argue. And he's published and written online on that, holding that position for many years. And he was deposed from his position as teaching elder basically for not listening to his session and his presbytery when they asked him to stop making that such an issue. So he had appealed that to Synod, and we denied his appeal or his complaint. And you know, he and the main person who he was opposed to shared a big hug at the end, but in the end, we did not end up honoring his complaint. So you can see how with these cases, there's a lot of theological care that's people care a lot about these issues, and that's good, but they are very complicated. They're hard to, it's hard to know what to do, and I ask you to pray that, as I said, that we can work these out in the lower courts wherever possible, and that if these issues have to come to Synod again, that we can address them wisely and with the right amount of time. The one last topic I wanted to address before Dr. Stahl comes up was that last year there was a question of whether we should, elders and pastors should sing when we visit churches that are not exclusive psalm singing churches. So you can imagine there's some different views on that. Our blue book says that singing anything that's not a psalm in the worship of God is sinful. And we don't want to honor the, we want to honor the purity of the way God has told us to worship. We also, Pastor Titus Martin and the session at College Hill had argued that there's a matter of conscience involved, and that we don't want to be divisive. We want to be respectful of our brothers and sisters at other churches when we worship with them. So there's different positions on that, and there had been a committee created to study that question and come back with some recommendations, and Pastor Gregory contributed to that committee this year. In the end, we ended up just doing nothing. We ended up tabling that topic and not ruling on it one way or another. I think we found in listening to people that they're pretty strongly held positions on either side, and maybe this isn't something that we need to rule on directly, and maybe it's not necessarily wise to do so. So that was one that I was very interested in coming in. I think it's a very difficult question. It's hard to answer in a good way because it's so complex, but we did decide not to address that any further. That covers what I was going to talk about. Any questions about what anything that I've mentioned so far? All right, Dr. Stahl. Oh, Richard? It has been dropped. Yeah. Unless someone brings it back, it will not come back to Synod. Okay. John?
So there are two more matters that I'm going to report on that were judicial in nature, but more complex. But they both, and they're both ongoing and complicated, but both have pieces of happy endings, which is why we're tucking them here at the end, because it was an outworking of what Adrian reported on the opening sermons the first 2 days, but really all week. Pastor Ian Wright, fraternal delegate from the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, preached on Wednesday, and Ed Blackwood, who is now in the Springs RP Church, preached on Thursday, and all four were excellent messages urging us toward mercy and being charitable in our relationships. So the first one that I'll mention came out of the Phoenix Reformed Presbyterian Church, and it's sensitive, and so we weren't even given many of the details, but it involved two young people, a woman who was a bit older and an under 17-year-old young man, who were both children of officers who were accused in a very public manner before a lot of people and then through social media as well of having an inappropriate relationship. And it was ugly and very hurtful, involving an anonymous call to Children and Youth Services and just a bunch of really very nasty things. The Pacific Coast Presbytery, which oversees that congregation, was alerted by the pastor and got involved very quickly, sent a three-man commission who investigated, found no wrongdoing on the part of these young people at all, but they reported it to their presbytery, back to their chain of, but it never got publicly, they were never publicly exonerated. And so this actually happened a year ago, and through the fall, and so it came back to this synod as a complaint from those families. And so a judicial committee was appointed, met with the families, actually were there here on campus last week, as well as members of the presbytery, got them together, and while there is an ongoing issue, which there'll be a commission appointed to look into what to deal with the person who propagated all, person and persons who propagated all these false accusations. It was a very moving ceremony when the judicial committee got the presbytery representatives and the families together, publicly read their exoneration, finding of no sinful activity, asked their apology, apologize, ask their forgiveness, and to hear the families speaking and offering forgiveness. So that started off, as I saw, Friday morning in what was a very good outworking of at least that part of that situation. Again, it's ongoing. There's many other issues in that congregation, apparently, that a 7-man commission will be looking into. The last thing that I'll report on involves the Reformed Presbyterian Home. I should probably have Louise come and talk about this. And I don't claim to understand all the issues. This has been going on for about a year, a little bit, or maybe longer, the relationship of the RP home to our denomination. There have been concerns. There was a specific complaint about a minister who was treated, complicated set of issues that I don't think I fully understand about his family acting in his behalf but not having power of attorney immediately, communication issues that didn't go well, delays in processing things, government regulations about what the home could and couldn't do, and about financial issues that were neglected. And that this retired pastor, Pastor Jim Wright, left the home, went back to his family in Florida under the care of the Orlando congregation. And the issues, I think, have been fully resolved, but the relational issues were not, and the Orlando session pressed the matter to Synod, saying that there should be an apology about the way this was handled, and apparently it wasn't a sufficient apology last year. So it came back again, and Bill Weir, who is elder at North Hills and has served the RP home long and well, and other representatives of the home's administration met with the Orlando session. Again, the judicial committee oversaw this. It's sort of the things that happen at Synod working as they're supposed to. And then another ceremony in front of all of us of an apology issued, forgiveness granted, and Bill Weir is going to be flying, perhaps at his own expense, to Orlando to meet with Pastor Wright and deliver an apology and just reconcile the issue. And then what I found, so after, and everybody, people stood and applauded the whole situation. The next day, Bill reported that while he was out at lunch, piles of money, because he was talking about doing this with his own expense if needed, piles of money just appeared under his computer. People were showing their support if he was going to go at his own expense to help support that. So that was a very positive outworking. As I say, there is a commission, one, maybe two, the two committees. I think there's two committees looking into the ongoing relationship. Am I right, George, with the two? There's at least one and maybe two different ones about the relationship of the home, the denomination, and particularly the issue of government regulations that you have to provide spiritual support services to your residents there's a large number of Roman Catholic residents. The home has a priest come and minister to them. They have held in a private ceremony a Roman Catholic mass. We think that that's not something that, I think it would be the will of the Synod that not be something that we do with an institution that bears our name, that we need to find a way to minister differently to those residents. But that's being studied by another committee to report back next year. Yeah, and that's a a more complex set of issues. The home is independent, am I right, Louise? It's independently run by the RP Women's Association, but not owned by the denomination. The college has a tighter control by the denomination than does the RP home. But that's the, but it was very, very positive to see the personal reconciliation between Pastor Wright's family, the Orlando session, and the home administration. I trust that you looked through the State of the Church report that Adrian ran off and put in the back, which gives a summary of a number of things that we've been reporting on.